Welcome back to Toys on Tab. This is another rad episode. Tony comes on and talks through his art career, illustration, schooling, the dynamic between his parents, and making one of the coolest figures, Captain Pink Eye, who will be made in soft vinyl, which we're really pumped for. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. Follow us along. If you want to jump on and support us in a free way, you can like, subscribe, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. And if you want to support us in a paid way and support the show, patreon.com/toysontap. That's where you're going to get extra stuff. That's where you're going to get episodes of Tapped In Beyond the Toy Shelf, which is me and Spanky Stokes starting back up this week. And that's where you're going to get all insights into what we got going on. You can also follow the upcoming Kickstarter for Queso Jones in partnership with More Horrific. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Please, please, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do, and how long you've been doing it.
Gotcha. Hey guys, my name is Tony Bowie. I work as an illustrator, mostly freelance. I was raised in the 80s where cereal and Saturday morning cartoons ruled my world. I think that really defined the artist and the person I grew up to be. Dabbled in illustration. And the way I did illustration was, like, to get clients, I would do pop-up events like Comic-Con. And then that led me to DesignerCon. And, like, that just opened up my eyes to the world of, like, independent toys. Like, it was so cool seeing what different artists were making. Like, it's one thing to do prints, but you take that form to, like, something more, like, really tangible, like, you could really play with. And that just blew my mind. So that was, like, you just, like, modern day manufacturing, overseas manufacturing, where, like, small companies could do it. Yeah, so that just really opened my eyes. And now I make toys. And I feel like everything from toys to my sense of illustration is all inspired by, like, the fun stuff that I grew up on.
Dude, I did not know that you were an illustrator. I think that's the hard part about, like, meeting artists at shows. I get like 30 seconds to maybe at most 5 minutes with an artist. And as I'm trying to talk to them, it's like, I love your work. I want to buy a piece. Let's schedule you on the podcast. But that's still okay. So we have to figure out, like, all this stuff, how you're an illustrator, how you've done Captain Pink, like, all the good stuff. Take me back to you as a kid. What are the shows, the toys, all the things that are kind of surrounding you and making you who you are?
That's so easy. I feel like every kid in the 80s grew up on the same thing. It was Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
That was the, that was like the media that just took everyone in. Just what a crazy phenomenon. It's Ninja Turtles, but back then, you know, we were really poor. So my mom and dad really couldn't buy us. Like, I've never had a full Ninja Turtle set as a child. It was only when I became, like, as an adult, I could buy my own figures. So, you know, we'd pick certain figures from the set, like Samurai Leo is definitely a big one. Other shows, like, I loved the intro to Thundercats. But I never watched Thundercats. I just like the intro to Thundercats. What else was there? Transformers, Captain Planet, Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And now we're skewing away from cartoons, but there was just so much to grow up to watch back then.
Almost like, yeah, it feels like when you describe it to people, like, they would never understand how formative it was. It almost sounds like so much junk. Like, we were just taking in so much content from the world.
Yeah, and that content was so cool, but it came with merchandise. I don't know what that says about us, because I know we all grew up to be, like, action figure collectors or, like, any type of toy collector.
Yeah.
But it was just what we were fed, and I love it. I just love, like, what like I love what the TV shows came out with and all the marketing that came out with it. Like one thing I really remember was when Batman Returns came out. I think they learned from the first movie,
Yeah.
but I remember going to Target and like there was just so much Batman Return stuff. We're talking about your Trapper Keepers, we're talking about cereal, we're talking about fruit snacks. Like Batman Returns really did such a great marketing job for them kids.
Dude, even their, if I remember correctly, even their cereal box was wrapped in Saran wrap or something, and there was like a plastic Batman something on the box.
Dude, I want to Google this up real quick, but
Yeah.
I do remember being Saran wrapped.
Yeah, I can't remember what the actual thing was. It was like this big plastic piece. Maybe it was a mask, I don't know. I mean, the doing all that stuff. Tell me about the, I'm always interested in backstories and stuff. Saying that you like never had a full set of Ninja Turtles or something like that. Did you have friends that you would go over their house and they had all these toys? What was that kind of like watching it kind of happen?
Yeah, I think just because my parents were just so protective of me, I didn't really go over to my friends, a lot of friends' houses because, yeah, I don't know why. Like that wasn't a thing. But I remember kids taking their toys to school.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave, go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys
We talk about old toys
and new toys.
and toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
It's We make fun of Dave a lot.
Hey, I'm all right with that. So yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be,
Yeah, you could. Who
but you
knows?
gotta check it
Anyway,
out.
Toy
Toy
Rats,
Rats.
YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
And that's where we would like show off our toys. Yeah, but back then, another thing that I just loved, like my friends knew I loved, was He-Man.
Yeah.
I loved He-Man so much. I would talk about He-Man: The New Adventures, and that cartoon just was not as cool as the original. But that's how much I loved cartoon and TVs as a kid. And speaking of like back then, it's like it was also comic cards too, like Marvel Universe 3, like there was Monster My Pocket cards. Like all those things just really like help create that identity of like so many different male boys around that time.
Dang, yeah. At what point, I mean, as you're going through school and stuff, we have this falling out with toys. Most kids at least have this where they either figure out that, like, oh my gosh, I'm attracted to these people. Like, I need to get rid of toys. I gotta seem cooler. When did that kind of happen? And then when did you start to pick up art a little bit? Because that's gotta feed into who you are now.
Yeah, I would say, oh, what a great question. I would say that's probably around 5th or 6th grade. I remember when this like craze happened, because it happened to a bunch of other people too. When Street Fighter 2 came out, like
Yeah.
that game just changed everything. I think a bunch of my friends were like, we still like toys, but it was more about trying to be the best at Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. And yeah, just 6th grade. I think that was. I remember 6th grade. I want to say Street Fighter 2 was coming out on SNES. There was a giveaway, or not a giveaway, but like you, the video games had like a send away thing where you send like $20 and you get a Street Fighter shirt. And I was like, Mom, can we get this? Can we get this? And yeah, she buckled and. I got that shirt. I thought it was the coolest shirt ever. It was art featuring the Street Fighter 2 promo art. So it's like the one where Chun-Li's about to do a kick, Ryu's like
Oh,
knocked
so
out,
sick.
and Blanka's doing. Yeah, it was such a great like promo art. I was like, I want that as a shirt. Yeah, like all this stuff. Just thinking about it now, just like really defined who I am and what I like.
Dang,
Still to this day.
yeah, and I, dude, I remember having those moments of like, Mom, can I get this? Like in the store, you like carry around the toy, hoping that they buy it for you.
Or like you just keep asking until they finally buckle. In the grand scheme of things, for some families, $20 was a lot. But like looking back in the grand scheme of things, to make you happy and to help you fit in at school and to do something that you love, all it took was $20.
It was, yeah. And I think, what I didn't get in toys, like my mom and dad would buy in video games. And video games are so expensive. They were like $60, you know, which is roughly the same price they are today. And
yeah, isn't that crazy?
How much? It's so crazy because
they're the same price. That's weird.
Yeah, they're the same price. It's $60 still expensive. But just thinking about like how hard my parents worked to like buy us all these Nintendo and Super Nintendo games. But yeah, like but then by high school, you know, that kind of like weaned off, and it was towards fashion because you just wanted to fit in. But yeah, that's, you know, just growing up and just different waves and things you end up liking. But eventually,
yeah.
Well, I don't say eventually, but for most of us, if you're really into the creative stuff, you kind of find a way back.
When did you start to like acknowledge that you liked art? Does it come from the fashion part? Does it come from like the video game side? Where are we finding that you start your art journey?
Let's say, so in sixth grade, I knew I enjoyed doing art, but coming, you know, being born to Asian parents, they were like, no, this is not the best decision that you should be doing with your life.
Yeah.
So that was I always had a joy doing it, but I definitely looked into different things. So by high school, I remember I was still into art, definitely in high school, because I was taking art classes, but my art was definitely not good. And, you know, because that's when you're still trying to, you don't even know your foundation yet, like until college, if you really want to take art seriously. So you're just doodling, and my doodles were so bad. But yeah, I'd be copying, like, I remember looking at Capcom art, like that was the thing that was most accessible to me, like art of Capcom books. So I'd be looking at images of Mega Man or Street Fighter thinking, oh yeah, I should draw this, and this is what makes my portfolio good. And yeah, I was totally wrong, but you know, when you're a kid, you don't have when you're a kid at that time, you don't really have access to the internet, you don't know what a portfolio looks like, so you're just doing what you like and you just try to emulate it. And yeah, so I finally remember drawing Capcom stuff. I remember drawing Pokemon because that was, by that time, Pokemon was really big in the United States. And Batman, like, love drawing Batman because Bruce Timm's Batman animated series designs were just so graphic in a good way. And it was just very, like, just so fun to draw, those sharp angles.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes back to Batman, right? Like, there was something about Batman in the 90s and early 2000s that was just hitting different.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Batman and its animated series and Batman Returns are like two of my favorite properties. Like, I love the Batman suit in Batman Returns. Like, those abs, they're just so streamlined and efficient. Like, this is the stuff I noticed as a kid. And it still stayed with me.
Dude, that's such a funny way to say that. Like, those abs look so good. Tell me about
so
the cultural.
So
yeah. Tell me about the cultural dynamic of like having parents that don't want you to pursue art. I mean, for so many of us, without even knowing it, we have gone through something like that. And then you have the other side where it's like, no, just pursue whatever you want. So you have that weird dichotomy where they're facing off. Tell me about yours.
Yeah, like looking back on it, when you're young, you think like, you could, especially when you're about to graduate high school, you're like, oh, I could do anything. You're just sold, like you could do this dream of like, if you work hard enough, you could make it come true. And I definitely had that, you know, had that in the back of my head. But my mom and dad, they were coming from a place of like, hey, the real world is real. Like, you have to have a good education. You got to have a backup plan. Like, they did not want me to go the artist route, but I just kept on. I really kept on fighting it. Like, I even told them, like, oh, I want to pursue illustration as my major in college. And the thing that I wanted to give them, I want to give them a backup plan just in case, like, if this all fails, I got something I can lean on. And I actually joined the army in 2001. So like, that was my backup plan. Like, I'm going to join the army reserves. I'm going to pay for my college and pursue illustration. You know, just give them like, no doubt in their minds that I'll make it. So while I was pursuing art, I had the military thing in the background. But yeah, like, this art thing has been super challenging, especially when like full-time jobs for illustration, they just keep on cutting it. So you have to live that freelance life. And now AI is coming into the mix. But to get back to your original question, it's like a dichotomy is like, I had this dream that I wanted to do art. They were more or less against it, but they still supported me anyway. They're like, they knew how passionate I was about it. And yeah, looking back, they were totally right. Like, just having a backup plan or just something like, art doesn't have to be your main career. If you're passionate about art and just doing it on the side, that's still so important. Like, even though I work for like creative companies, like, I feel more happy with my own personal art I do. So I feel very fortunate that I could do that. And definitely thanks to my mom and dad for keeping me, what's the word? Just giving me like the thought of like, hey, have a backup plan if this all fails.
Yeah. I want to take the journey with you of going to school for graphic design, or any type of like illustration, any classes that you take in that. But as you join the army, does it kind of feel like you're taking a step backwards from what you want to pursue as a dream?
You know, I guess you could say that. But when I was in the army, that was also my second year of college.
Okay.
So that was kind of happening at the same time. So, but it, the only thing that felt difficult besides the training was that I would spend my summers instead of like hanging out with my friends as like a 19 or 20 year old, I'd be spending it with a group of random strangers in like Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And so it's not really a step back. It's kind of like, looking back on it, I used to think like, oh man, I'm losing this quality of time I could be spending with like friends and family. More friends, because my family, they would work during the summer. And yeah, so that was I definitely missed a lot of birthday events, like in my 20s, because I'd have to go drill with the army. So it wasn't, it wasn't like me taking a step back from my career, but it was just losing out on these moments. Like, you know, birthday comes once a year, too bad I can't spend it with you, but hopefully I can do it next year. That's yeah. How I tell my friends. But I'm still friends with like all my friends, so we're good.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot. Okay, so take me. You get to college finally. You're there. You're taking. How does this kind of like, up until this point, it seems like you've only got your own illustrations without the idea of what a portfolio is and that kind of stuff. And now you're entering school where they're like, now it's time to buckle down. What is that like?
That is like eye-opening for sure. Like, they get you ready to all those prerequisites class helps you understand what goes inside a portfolio. And then once you're in the program, if you're lucky enough to get in the program, it's like you have to find your focus within the industry. Well, first you have to know what industry you want to be in. Is it children's books? Is it video games? Is it feature animation? Is it TV animation? So I went to San Jose State, and we have a really excellent illustration animation program. So you do, at the time, they were like, they wanted to teach us 2D animation. And then it was also going to CG animation. Like, they just want to stay with the current trends. And yeah, that's where my goal was at the time. I wanted to break into TV animation. And we'll talk about that later too. But yeah, TV animation was my thing. So that was the focus of my portfolio. And so I was looking at like current TV shows. Like I love the Fairly Odd Parents at the time. I love anything by Jenny Tartakovsky.
Yeah.
So my designs were just very like, they were also graphic and strong. Yeah, then along the way, this is when the time Kid Robot was really popular. So I'd like trek out to San Francisco and visit their shop just to see, like, just to learn more about that culture too. It was, but at the time I could definitely not afford anything. So it was all eye candy to me, just seeing like what those artists were doing. But I would definitely buy blind boxes and, you know, and mostly peruse, but my heart at the time was still into breaking into TV animation, but I was open to other things.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty early on to be buying blind boxes and stuff. And like, what's the thing that's like getting you going then to buy, like, what's the interest there? Like a reignition of toys while also pursuing 2D animation?
Yeah. Because there were some blind box figures that were just really just lend itself to animation in terms of like how cute it was. So yeah, like back then I was like, it's until this day, like when I buy a toy, I was like, oh, I could use this for reference for something. And I just loved Amanda Vassell figures because they were just so fun and so cute. And yeah, I still have one of her blind boxes from the TikTok Apocalypse set. It's still one of my favorite toys to look at.
As you are pursuing this, I mean, going through college, do you realize that you don't want to pursue 2D animation about halfway through or like almost through? Like when do you become this freelance artist?
When I figure it out, like I said, don't figure it out. I don't figure it out for a while until like my late 20s, early 30s.
And this okay. is
definitely after college already. So like I had the chance to intern at Nickelodeon.
Awesome. And
yeah, like by this point, like I'm in my late 20s already. So like the only reason I do the internship is because I graduated. And they're like, oh, if you do want to do this internship, you have to be enrolled in a class. So I just enrolled in any art class. And then I was like, hey, I'm in an art class. Can I take, that's how bad I wanted to break in. And that's when I learned about, so I got to intern Nickelodeon and I learned about the process of TV animation. And one thing I learned about was when I was talking, you get to have one-on-ones with the artists that are working there on, to see like where you want to take your career and just learn from them how they broke in, and yeah, they just give you like this great advice.
Yeah,
so that's one really cool thing about the Nickelodeon internship. And one thing I kept on hearing from these artists, I'm like, oh, what drives you? That was one of my questions. And it's like they all, like when you're young, you think like, oh, this is my dream job. Once I get this dream job, I'm set. But for them, it was just like, it's just a job. Like what really makes them happy is them working on personal projects.
Yeah.
And I definitely heard this from more than just one artist. And so that stayed in the back of my mind. And it really is hard to break into animation if you have like no experience doing it. Like once you start working on those connections, then it's easier to get jobs.
Yeah. When did you, like, did that kind of change your view of art? Like hearing that, like, or seeing that, man, they get the joy from their personal projects? Because that's kind of like life altering for what you wanted to chase.
For sure. That like, once I heard that, like, multiple times, I'm like, oh, that's true. Like, you want to do stuff for yourself because it makes you happy. And that's, when I heard that, so there was two things that were happening. Like the craft fair scene was blowing up. And I also met this artist named Chris Lee, who you know as The Beast Is Back.
Heck yeah.
And he just opened my eyes to like freelance illustration. And I've just been following his formula where he does pop-up events. And that's what gets me and him freelance gigs. So as much as I wanted to do animation, like I had survived. So I started doing these pop. I took what limited money I had, invested it in myself, and like I definitely started making art prints and just art prints and mini prints, like just paper goods, because I was like, that's the thing that I could print out and sell at the most money that I could get. And I was like, let's try this out. And it worked. And then, so that just helped me get more freelance gigs in illustration. And I just found more I like the level of control I have when you do, you know, a sketch and you take it all the way to finish. It's like, it's quick, it's fast, and you have all the control. You take that, you compare that against like TV animation, and it's like, you know, you have the pre-production, you have the concept art, then you have to do the character design, then you got to figure out how the backgrounds fit. Oh, I missed the storyboarding. You got to do the storyboarding, and then you do the animation, and that could take a year to complete. And there's just so many cogs in that wheel for a finished product. You compare that to like just straight up a one-person illustration assignment, and it's like, yeah, that could go live in less than 3 months.
That's so crazy. Like that whole process is so much. Tell me about meeting Chris. He's been on the podcast. He's been really, he was fun. I have some of his work. He's kind of doing the illustration thing and showing you like other parts of it. Do toys kind of start to creep in around this era where it's like, oh my God, I can now make toys? When does that kind of fall in after meeting Chris?
Yeah. Well, Chris is all right guy. I think he's okay. Totally joking. You know, he's one of the coolest dudes. So funny story. I met him at a Mexican restaurant where my roommate at the time invited me to his friend's birthday party. And then, and when I get there, I'm sitting across from Chris. And the reason is like, oh, Tony, you're an illustrator. Chris is an illustrator. You guys might talk. And it's like, the funny thing is, like, once I sit right across from him, I know who he is already. Because back then, artist portfolios, they never really had, like, the About Me page never really had a photo. I don't know why artists didn't do that, but it just didn't. Chris did. And I, as an admirer of his work, like in the last year of college, because at this time now, like last year of college, I'm just like, I'm breaking. I love animation, of course, but I love like things that have and their animation adjacent. And Chris definitely had that look. But yeah, once they sit me across from him, I straight up ask him, "Is your name Chris Lee? The Beast is Back." So I should have asked him because I recognized him from his website portfolio picture. And and we started talking, and one of the first thing he does at his like birthday dinner was like, hey, do you want to see pictures of my toy collection?
Oh my gosh. So
he busts out this iPad from his backpack, and he just said, oh, we just moved in, here's some pictures of my toys. And I'm just flipping through his iPad, and I'm like, man, can I come over? And that's the start of our friendship. But here's the funny thing. Like, I've known him for over a decade now. I've never seen him walk around with a backpack and laptop or an iPad. So it was like, what a bizarre thing to have at that moment to show to me. But yeah, he's never done that again, where he just brings out an iPad with him.
Now I hope to one day he does that. I like hanging out with him and talking to him at shows and stuff is so funny. And then I see now I'm going to ask where his iPad is when I see him at Kaijufornia. Jeez.
Well, this episode comes out before that. He'll definitely remember the reference.
Oh, good. So you do like you're having that moment with him. Does this kind of change your trajectory? Because now you're meeting someone that you kind of looked up to or looked at their work and thought it was great. Like, where's your trajectory headed at this point in your timeline?
You know, it didn't change like right away. but I would definitely reach out to him about questions about freelancing. And I still do, like, in terms of like, oh, how much should I charge for this project? And but when did the trajectory change? Probably within, I want to say within that first year I met him. Yeah, because I feel like I was applying to different third-party agencies, like Creative Circle at the time, which I don't do anymore. But I think that, you know, once you, if you want to get your break into the scene, like, the companies like that exist for a reason. So yeah, so I was using those companies to try to find freelance gigs. So yeah, I would say within the first year, he really changed the trajectory of freelance and also of doing pop-ups and craft fairs.
Okay. And then you go, what are you doing at these craft fairs?
So you made me remember something that, so when I first started my business, this is so ridiculous, like, it was focused on greeting cards, and I wanted to do greeting cards. So of course I did the normal greeting cards, like, this is your anniversary, this is your birthday. But I was like, oh, how do you do greeting cards for like the really negative times? Like, oh, I want to break up with you, this is a breakup card.
Turns out, I like that idea.
The idea is there, I guess, but it definitely doesn't sell well, like the birthday cards or the relationship cards. So even though you have that there as like, you know, like you try to pitch those things, it's like still the regular cards sell well for a reason. And then, but you're also competing. Well, I was competing against, like, the greeting card industry was dying because you could just send a text message instead of like doing cards. So I want to say I was doing greeting cards for a good, I want to say 5 to 8 years. That was part of my inventory when I was doing these events. But then once I started doing comic conventions, I started doing fan art, and you could definitely see a shift in my art. You'll definitely see it on Instagram, where like
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait. Salvation! Hooray! We're saved, DLV2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
So my art, when I was doing freelance, it was what I learned in animation school. I wanted things, shapes to be very exaggerated, but then, as it progressed, those shapes, they're still exaggerated because they're graphic, but they're like just more, they're muted down, where it's more shape and form friendly. Things are more rounder. The outlines are a little thicker. Just things are easier to read. So it changed from, like, I would say, from like that fairly odd parent style.
Yeah.
To more something like, I don't know, like, let's just say a Sufubi toy. Like, that's just a great round, simple shape.
Yeah.
If we're thinking about like Sufubi mascots, like the Japanese banking mascots, like, I would say I take a lot of design inspiration from that now.
How do we get you to go back to greeting cards? We need them.
You know, I still have a couple left, but I just don't sell them anymore because it just. To make the profit off a greeting card, like, yeah, it's gonna be $4 for a card. If I sell an art print, it's $20. So it's like, I'd rather take my time, you know, selling the art prints rather than the greeting cards. And I've had a couple friends and a couple of shoppers that ask, oh, are you gonna do greeting cards again? I'm like, my heart's not in there. At the time I enjoyed making people laugh through my greeting cards, but now it's like, I just want to make things that I like at that particular moment. And right now, it's definitely focusing on my first Sofubi toy.
Dude, absolutely. Holy moly. That's okay. So now that we have that piece of information, which Toys on Tap is not in the greeting card game, but if you ever want to collaborate on making greeting cards, I'll pay for a factory in China to do this, because holy, that's so fun.
Just make a sticker with a funny quote. Let's just do that.
That's I'm so game. I'm so game. Like just a Captain Pink Eye greeting card. Oh my gosh. Tell me about the first toy that you that you start taking a stab at, and then kind of the surrounding. You learned that you could do toys, that kind of thing, because that takes either 3D modeling, clay work, someone else is doing, like, so much goes into that. Tell me about that.
So at the time, I'm still doing craft fairs.
Okay.
I moved back to the Bay Area now, and I meet this fellow artist named Paul. Him and his wife Maxine run their own business called Props and Pops, where they were originally from the gaming industry, because how difficult it was. They wanted to do a side hustle, and they wanted to, what their main focus at the time, besides creating their own goods, was they wanted to help independent artists put out their own designs, their own tangible designs. So it could be toys, it could be planners, or it could be, I don't know, ornament boxes or something, just because they had that skill set from sculpting and game design, and they were bringing it to life with 3D printing and making molds. And so I hooked up with them, we were just talking things out. And I didn't think I had the audience that wanted toys. So, and this is when I was still very much into selling greeting cards and doing a little bit of fan art, but greeting cards was the main focus. So at that time, like, I just wanted to make like things for that particular line. And yeah. So, like I said, I was just scared to do toys. I wanted to do toys, but I was like, I don't think my audience will buy this. So then I went the safe route. I was like, all right, let's do something that's still 3D. And so I was like, oh, let's do a planter. So that was the very first project I did with them. It was like this planter, but it was so small, like the basin itself, like, could only fit like an air plant. So you really couldn't put that much, because the design is like half a skull and then a cat sitting on top of that skull. So it's definitely more decorative than it is a utility item. So I sold them, but I think we made a run of 50 to 100. It took about, you know, a year and 6 months to sell all those. Actually, no, it was definitely less than 100. I want to say we made a run of 50 just okay. to test it out. And like for me to sell 50 items in a year and 6 months, it's definitely too long, because that item should have moved. So, you know, for me at the time, I was like, I'm unsure this is going to do. I don't think I'm the right guy to sell. I should just stick to art prints and greeting cards. So that was, I don't want to say it was a failure, but at the time it was just like, I kind of took it like that. I'm like, all right, I did it. I tried it. It doesn't work. I don't know how long it took me to actually go from the planter to the toy, but it definitely took some convincing from Chris and my friend Paul that ran the shop. And I want to say maybe a year after that, we're like, all right, let's give it a go. We'll do 25 toys, resin. And the first toy was called Stego. As part of my, it's a resin Stegosaurus. It's part of my Extinction Friends series. And that really, I remember the release. It was in 2019, because after that, it was like the pandemic. And so I sold about 10 on a designer con.
Okay.
And then once I put it online, the remaining 15, it was one of 25, it sold out. It sold out within like 3 days for like those 25 items. And I was insane. Like, oh, okay, we have something here. So then I do another run of 25 of the same color. And that sold out too. And I'm like, oh, that's great. But then I remember during the pandemic, that's when we put out a second colorway for the Stegosaurus and then a brand new figure of my Brachiosaurus. And we did that because now we're in the pandemic.
Yeah.
Decon is still a thing, but they had it streaming. I forget through what platform, but it was like one of those
Pop Shop Live or something. Yeah.
There we go. It was Pop Shop Live. Oh my gosh. I'll tell you, I hated being on Pop Shop Live. I hate having a camera in front of me.
Yeah.
But like once I was like, all right. So I was on camera and like, so once I get to that toy release, I'm like, all right, so this is the toy release for Brack.
Empire Blister.
Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1.18 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available.
Empire Blisters.
Now functional. Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
I pressed live and like in. Oh my gosh, that moment, I could see like sold, like just flashing on screen. And my face is just like bewildered. I'm like, oh my God, this thing is moving so fast. And yeah, so it was like that release sold out in less than a minute or maybe 2 minutes. It was sold out so fast online. And that's when I knew, I was like, oh yeah, people like dinosaurs. People like what I'm doing. And it's just this sense of like, you know, being really happy, like, oh yeah, this was definitely the right move to do.
Unreal. To like, how do, man, what's the immediate feeling? Like, oh, I'm diving headfirst into toys. Like to see your figure just go nuts like that. What's that initial?
So I knew I had an audience, but like at the same time, I only put like 50 toys to release that day, about 25 of each color. And you know, it's definitely a small run, but like that feeling just felt so good knowing that I could do something like that online. And I remember calling Chris that a couple of minutes after that and saying, dude, that was amazing, because he was watching my stream too. Like I had friends watching that stream, like just supporters. And I was on cloud nine for 2 or 3 days after that.
Dude, that's insane. I absolutely love that. I love when artists have that first initial like oomph, and then it's like, man, now what? That's always the question. And so like when you, after that happened, what's the next thing that pops up? Like now what?
Take me back. You know what? It was the pandemic. I think I was living back at home with my parents, helping them out. What's going through my mind at that time? The pandemic was just, you know, it was such a intense time, but also like so chill because I didn't have to go out that much. But I think if we're talking about like what my plan was after that, the plan was to always release three dinosaurs. So first the Stegosaurus, the Brachiosaurus,
yep,
and then a T-Rex after that. So then I think later that, I forget when, but I was definitely working on a third dinosaur that same year. So the idea was to do three dinosaurs in three different colors. And that, I think that project spanned about 6 years. And that was a really fun project. But then I had to stop that dinosaur series because like I wanted a lot of people to get it. What I noticed was because of the price point, because of like how well they scaled together, and because people knew I wasn't doing like a crazy run, because I only wanted to do three colors each with three different designs. So it's nine different dinosaurs you could collect.
Mm-hmm.
So what I saw from my audience was like they wanted all nine. And I was like, oh no, that wasn't the intention. I didn't want you guys to hoard the figures. I wanted you, in my mind, the way I designed it was like any dinosaur of any color could easily match together, because like all the T-Rexes were like yellows and oranges. All the stegosaurs were yellow and oranges. All the brachiosaurs were like coolers. They were blues and greens. And then the T-Rex was like shades of red. So you could like just mix and match, and you could make a good set with any variation of that. But yeah, no, I slowly learned, or I quickly learned, that people wanted every figure released. So it made it hard if you didn't know how popular the toy was, because I'd have like random friends that were just like artsy, but they didn't know about like my particular toy following. So I said, they would send me a message like, oh, can we get that toy? I'm like, dude, it sold out like in minutes, like days ago.
Yeah.
I wanted to have a release that like anyone could buy at any time on my store, but that just never happened. Like it would sell out.
So you wanted to make them, but you were shocked that people, because I have the same mentality, like wanted all of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is a great problem to have. I am not denying that, but it's like I also wanted other people to have them too.
Yeah.
So I think with going Sofubi, making like a higher run of toys, I think that's going to be awesome. Hopefully they all eventually all sell out, but I hope they don't sell out as fast as my resin figures.
I mean, they probably will. People still love them. When do we, at some point in this art journey, when do we come up with the idea of Captain Pink Eye?
Captain Pink Eye, yeah. So my first real set of toys was definitely my Extinction Friends dinosaur series. So I just been, so that ended, I want to say about two, maybe 3 years ago. So I've been thinking of like another toy set I wanted to do. And at first I had this idea where I wanted to make bootleg mechs. And so I would like combine like a Gundam body with like a Mazinger chest emblem, or just take different pieces from different mechs and kind of like mash them together to make my own type of toy. So I was drawing this in my sketchbook. Fish saw it. He was like, what are you doing? Don't do that. So he was like, why don't you do something you love, Tony? Mechs and cats. And when he said that, we talked about this at DCon in last year at DCon in Vegas. And once he said that, I was like, that's such a good idea. It was such a random idea. He just saw my quick scribbles, and he just said, why don't you combine the two things you love? So then, yeah, after he gave me that idea, I started sketching up a character, and Captain Pink Eye was born. So, but originally he did not have that cool pirate's eye patch. That was like later into the design. So I think that version of Captain Pink Eye is only going to be for you guys that bought the resin figures. Going forward, he's going to have both eyes, and then he's going to have a name change because he can't be Captain Pink Eye anymore because there's no pink eye patch. Quick little information going your way for the next toy release.
What I'm being told is I have a limited edition one that no one else now gets, which makes my heart sing. Can I pitch an idea?
What you got?
You still call it Captain Pink Eye, and when the Sofubi releases, you just make a cloth eye patch that goes over it whenever he wants.
Oh,
that way you don't have to change branding.
I'm gonna message you and see some examples of like cloth, because that would be a really fun idea. I'm definitely open to that. I like that.
You make this toy. When's the initial release of Captain Pink Eye? What year do we have that happening?
You had it, yeah. That was the... So I wanted to test if Captain Pink Eye was a cute enough character that would move. And because of that show that you went to, Indie Toy Con, it was like, I felt really happy with that turnout and like the comments I was getting about the figure. So in the future, Captain Pink Eye, once we make the Sofubi version,
yeah,
I imagine an ecosystem of different animals and different mech suits where you could take out the pilot and just like put them into the different mech suits. So I'm also concepting what like a raccoon mech suit would look like. I don't have a fully finished design yet, but yeah, we're still sketching that out. But yeah, so in the future, like I want this to be a set that has longevity, and by doing swapping different parts that you could have that fun factor of like having, you know, just a cute animal, but then you could also have it ride different mech bodies.
God, you're talking blind box Sofubi, basically.
In the future, yeah, maybe. But for now, it's just going to be, you know what you're going to get. And yeah, so Indie Toy Con was a testing ground just to see if the character was good.
Okay.
So once we release the Sofubi, I think you'll also see the design, the prototype of what raccoon mech is going to be like. And then I think people will see what I'm trying to envision for this toy line.
Will the raccoon mech be the same size as the one as Indie Toy LA?
Indie Toy LA, those resin figures were, I think the highest was 4 inches for the Sofubi version. I want everything to be 5 inches.
Okay. So
from this point forward with the Sofubi release, everything will be scaled correctly.
Holy moly. Dude, I'm so pumped about this idea. This is a really cool thing. Coming off of Indie Toy LA, I mean, that wasn't your first time boothing, because you have the experience of boothing with like greeting cards and craft shows and those types of things. What did it like? Where are we headed now? Because that was a really cool show. I think Indie Toy LA killed it. Nucleus Gallery hosting that was a cool option. And it was so packed in there.
Yeah.
Like, awesome that I got to talk to people. My butt was touched 9 million times as people went by. It was so wildly packed. Where are we headed now? Like, what's the next move for you? Because that went so well.
So, what I heard from Indie Toy.
Yeah.
Gordon and his team is like, they wanted, so they're a new company. They opened up like 2 stores down from Gallery Nucleus, and they wanted more eyes on the store. So they teamed up with Nucleus to do this convention. And oh my gosh, that turnout for like just vendors, it was so cool to see. This is the spirit like of the indie spirit of DCon I missed, because back then you have like just artists trying different things and like, hey, this is what I'm making, check it out. And like I said, it's more than art prints, it's more than stickers, it's real tangible surface design. And yeah, that's putting personality into like every creation they have. So I think from my very limited talks with Indie Toy, I think they definitely want to do a year or two. It probably might have to be at Nucleus again, because like, I don't think they have the funding yet to do something like DCon did at the Pasadena Convention Center. So I think it's going to be a small grassroots movement, and then like word of mouth is just hopefully carry the brand where they could do bigger venues. That's the hope. And I really hope they do it again, because that turnout, it was so awesome. Just meeting like creatives and people that love things that are creative. Like, I had a blast. I was so tired that day, just like connecting with like not only friends, but just new shoppers like you, and just really cool people.
I mean, it's my initial or eventual goal is to host like a Toys on Tap show, something like that, or to do something in San Diego. And So when I walk into these smaller shows, or what you would deem a smaller show, even though definitely not small by any means, my brain is like, oh, how do I fit more people? If I did this show, what would I do differently? And it was, I was hard pressed to find anything that I would have changed. Like, I don't even think if I reorganized it, I could fit one more person. It was so good.
Did you, what toys did you come out with from that event?
Ooh, so now we're talking. I came out of that one. I mean, I bought the one from you.
Thank you.
I bought the orange version of the Kappa from Chris.
Yep. Did you get there in time to see like his other, Chris's other fish designs?
I saw the fish designs. Let's just have a second to talk about Chris. Now that he comes up in conversation. He knows how I feel about him. Great guy, fantastic artist. It is unfair for him to produce this like dinosaur submarine, like massive figure that looks that good and expect us to want to produce toys alongside him. It is like,
oh my gosh.
As I'm watching this envelop, because I go, that day was busy. Like whenever there's a toy show, there's always another. So like that one and Summer Slime were in the same day. And so I could have spent all day just sitting between your guys' booths because you guys were right next to each other. But as I'm like watching his stuff like take off more and more before Indie Toy LA, and then I get there and see it all in person, what are we doing? That's so unfair.
You know, I know Chris, and like I feel like that show, he was like, he had something to prove. Not to like other vendors, but to like himself. He's like, hey, I want to have a good showing. Like, because he hasn't done Comic-Con with just the weekend prior. So he really worked hard for that showing. It's like, for you to just have one toy release, that's already difficult. But that guy had three fish designs. He had the submarine plesiosaurus. He had the T-Rex design. And then he had the yokai umbrella designs. I spent the night at his place because I'm from the Bay, so you know, I crashed at his place. If we do events in LA, mm-hmm. I know he stayed up to like three, just working on those last minute details. I was done by like 11. I went to bed. I helped him pack his car. Went to sleep around 11. But yeah, I know he stayed up like to the very last straw, just working. So for him to do another 8 hours at the event and sell, I knew he was tired. So that guy like really put a lot of his blood, sweat, and tears, and just a lot of his soul into like that release. And it was a great release because I think he sold out everything.
Yeah, just killed it. With all of that happening and you have plans, what's next in the immediate future? I mean, because there's these shows coming up this year. Are you doing DesignerCon?
No, I'm not doing DesignerCon just because I feel like, have you gone to it with the biggest change?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the same being at DesignerCon in Vegas, only because I think it was like first year, you moved the venue a lot, like Vegas is potentially dying because no one wants to go. But I'm thinking this year could be way different because you have year 20, like 20th anniversary. Yeah. I think it's going to be huge. So yeah. But how are you feeling about it? Did you go last year?
I did go last year. And like, you know, everything you just said, I agree to expand on it. Like when I first went to DCon, as a vendor, I didn't have a toy. So I was doing just paper products, art prints and greeting cards and stickers. And yeah, I'd say like, I wasn't like super in the green, but I was definitely in the green, like just selling my own stuff. But I feel like with where DCon is now, to do a good event there, you have to have a toy. And an audience that's willing to buy that toy. And at the moment, just because we're still in the, or I just finished the testing stage with Captain Pink Eye. So now it'll be development. I don't want to go to DCon if I don't have a toy to sell.
Right.
And after seeing what I saw last year, I want to go, but it's also at the same time, it's like, yeah, Vegas is dying. And I'm like, do I want, I really want to go. I really want to go, but there's also a side of me that's like, yeah, you know what, just take it off and just keep on working on my own stuff.
Yeah, we have this weird thing where it's 2 years in a row you can't base the success of Vegas Designer Con, right? So last year, you have the first year. Of course, it's not going to be as big or as great as previous years. This year, you have the 20th anniversary. Of course, it's going to be bigger than all the previous years. So, like, we don't even have a control to view, like, oh, is this the cool show to go to still? But I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you go, I hope you take a lot of pictures.
Absolutely. I think I might take a media person to walk around and do that. I think that's the move that Toys on Tap might be moving into for shows and stuff.
Nice. Sounds awesome.
With that happening, tell me about the dynamics of shows you're anticipating, if not DesignerCon, which ones are you getting ready for? I think that when I create toys or I plan to work with other artists on like making toys happen, I have shows in mind that I want to make sure they're ready for. So what's, I mean, because you have the Raccoon Mech, the Sifubi like size that you want to do of Captain Pink Eye. What are the shows that then you're trying to be ready for to go?
The Bay Area has a show based in San Jose, a series of shows based in San Jose that have been gaining popularity. It's called SJ Made.
Okay.
And it's cool because they're a craft fair, but like it's the artists that apply for these shows are like the same artists that you would see at like an anime convention. So it almost feels like it just feels like a light anime convention with the illustrators are doing that show. I definitely do not fit into that mold.
Okay.
But so I will be doing Illomart, and that's happening the last weekend in September in San Jose. And then I have like their SJ Made winter event in December.
Awesome.
I won't have Captain Pink Eye there yet because, you know, still being made. But I'll have candles I've made in the past that I'll be selling at the event. And they come with like resin figures too, like these small little resin miniatures.
Did you just say candles?
So.
Dude, that is, how did that never come up? Tell me about your candles and then we'll jump back into this.
The candles don't sell well. So I've learned that my planners don't. After the Extinction Friends, I was like, you know what? I want to see if candles could do well. So it's more, you know, it's a toy. It's toyetic, but it's also like you could use it. You could just burn a candle and it's scented. So I learned how to like blend soy and paraffin for my combination of candles. And so it's, we have two designs. I have a mushroom and I have like this wood stump. And so the idea was like you buy one of those candles and it comes with a resin figure. The mushroom comes with the cat resin figure. And then the stump comes with like this little frog. And it's basically their homes that you eventually light up with a candle. And I just wanted to see if that would do well. It did okay. It definitely didn't move like the toys do, but I just wanted, because like I outsourced the toys, I wanted something to feel that I was doing myself for these events. Because even when it comes to like the printing of the my art prints, it's like I'm not doing it. Like I make the art, but I'm not like cutting down the edges. So I wanted like something that I felt like I was doing. That was the candles. oh my gosh, candles takes so much work with like heating up the wax and then like the figuring out the calculations to make them scented versus the wax ratio, and then just the curing time and just making sure you like thread that needle in correctly for the wick.
Yeah, you're describing the worst parts of art.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, we'll make this run and see how it goes. And yeah, I just sold the, I sold both of them at one Comic-Con, but I still have a bunch left because they just, they're just hard to move. So I have them as something that people will see. It will draw them in, but it's not something they purchase. And so yeah, at the moment it's like, yeah, I guess it's real estate that I could be leaving for another product. But yeah, that's probably why I did take it to the show. I took it to Indie Toy, but yeah, I think I only sold one candle that weekend compared to all the toys I sold.
Yeah. Okay.
But how did we get on that tangent?
Oh, yeah. You threw it in there like it was no big deal. That's how. yeah, so no, the shows
we were talking about toy shows. I think toy-wise, I might do D-Con and Collected Con.
Okay.
And Indie Toy LA for next year.
Awesome. I think that's a Collected Con as it comes to LA. That'll be a cool show. Another... Mm-hmm. The issue is like all these new ones as they come in, like you have the first couple of years that people are still acclimating to the show. So I'm excited to see what happens with Collected Con. I'm really excited to see what happens with Indie Toy LA. Like having a second year after such a banger of a year like that is absolutely incredible. Yeah, dude, I can't, because I'll probably see you at most of these shows. So that's amazing.
Dude. You better say hi, man.
Dude, this is the hard part.
Good friendship that's forming.
Hey, let me tell busy. You. No, well, the busy part is like at DesignerCon, I'm now boothing to see how I like it. And I'm trying to figure out what I want to do with that kind of stuff. But when I go to these shows, I've talked about it on here before. I'm in a weird spot, right? Like now that there's this dynamic between us, I for sure want to stand at your booth and talk about all things toys and how your life is going and how illustration's going, if you've brought greeting cards back or not, all those things. But the longer I stay, the more possibility that you miss out on talking to someone and making a sale. And so like, I have to play this weird middle ground of like, do I just message him later until I'm like, hey man, let's jump on a call because I want to hang out. Or do I just take the go ahead and just stand there for 10 minutes and see what's up?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get it. You know, but once you start doing more and more of these events, like you find out like that's the time you only really get to see those particular friends in person, because you know, we all have lives and we're all grinding. So like I miss doing Comic-Con. This is my first year. I haven't gone to Comic-Con since 2007. I used to go as an attendee, yeah, and then I became a vendor. But this year was the first time like I just didn't go. And like, yeah, there's a bunch of friends I haven't seen this year because I see them at Comic-Con. And you do end up missing those friendships, even though like you don't get to talk to them as much as you would like to. But it's like just seeing their face and just like catching up in that very small glimpse of time. It really doesn't mean a lot.
Dude, yeah, that's crazy. Okay, so end of the podcast is always for the artist to plug everything that they've got going on, everything they want people to know about, and all those things. So please, Tony, plug away for what's going on.
All right. So the newest Captain Pink Eye, or maybe Captain Mech Claw, the Tsufubi version, will be coming out next year. I'm working with that with my friend Jaime Ramirez. Huge shout out to him. We're also working on a raccoon design, and that raccoon design is going to have, I'm trying to find a cool way for the mech suit to be like trash can adjacent or trash can inspired that makes it look cool. So that's a very that's hard in my opinion.
That's amazing.
You can catch me at two more craft fairs in the SJ Made Air in San Jose. Follow me on Instagram. I'm at TonyBooley_TBFC. And shout out to my girlfriend Jeanette for putting up with me, and my friend Chris, who we've mentioned like 4 times on this podcast.
Yeah.
And what else is there? And I guess enjoy your day. Thank you for spending this hour plus with me.